This is the podcast for Philosophy 202, Theories of Knowledge.
Monday, January 7th, 2013. And so on our first day of class here, we're going to review the syllabus. The syllabus is online. I don't do paper copies for the hybrid students. Save on paper and printing costs. And so it's all there in Moodle for you as soon as you're able to get in. The online students are, I think, all there, but the hybrid students keep on being kicked out of the meta course, and again, I hope to have that resolved by the end of today. So, drop policy, just make sure that if you want to stick with the class, you log into Moodle by Thursday night, say 11:55 p.m., and then on Friday, anybody that hasn't logged in, you know, I look and see, I'm going to have look at my attendance record and see, you know, I'm going to try to make a judgment call, but I may kick out anybody that doesn't log into Moodle by Thursday. Now, I'm assuming that I get this enrollment issue solved today. So just make sure as soon as you can, log into Moodle so I know you're actively participating in the class, you didn't intend to drop and then forget about it, and so on. So do that by Thursday night at the latest. Best way to get a hold of me, Moodle messaging system inside of Moodle. Email is next best if you're on the go or you get your phone and doesn't like Moodle or what have you. Email's good. Phone is terrible. There's nothing I hate more than I get in my office and that hateful orange light is like staring me in the face. Oh, I don't want to listen to my messages. And then I go ahead and press it and it's like, hey, professor, this is, and this is Bob. And I'm in your philosophy class. Which class? What was his name? Bob? Brad, Bill, and then it's like, ah, and then I had this thing, like I got like picked up by the police, and you know, it's like, and you know, my girlfriend just left me, and I got to move, and I just don't know if I can, you know, and then like they cut out or something like that, and then they call back, and it's the same thing all over again. It's long-winded stories, and they say, and then if the message is clear, it's like, and my number is, just when they get to the number, they like mumble it or say it really fast, and I'm like, oh wait, let me write it down, and then like I'll have to play it again. So it's just so inefficient. And so annoying. So I don't pick up my phone unless I absolutely have to, and listening to messages, it's like torture. So if you want to get a hold of me right away, don't leave me a message. Don't leave me a phone message. I like the email because I can read any place. I can be having a conversation and read an email. I can be working in my office, listen to my right-wing hate radio and be, you know, answering emails and things. I can be doing all kinds of things. I can listen to some nice soothing music and do my email. But I really like the Moodle messages because I give Moodle messages top priority because you are my student. You are my top priority. If you message me in Moodle, there's a 99% chance that you are a student in one of my classes. Emails, I get all sorts of administrative BS. I get spam, there's just all kinds of crap in there, and I hate waiting through that. The Moodle messages, it's like, I know this is my student, I know they need something from me, I want to respond right away, and so I guarantee you a response within 24 hours. The requirements for this course, pretty reasonable for a four-credit course. So you have two midterms and a final. They're all objective, true-false, multiple-choice questions, based on the readings and our discussions in class here. Each of these is worth 30% of your grade. The other 10% is post to the forum. So there'll be an online forum for you to post in. You'll have to do that once a week. And I noticed in particular the hybrid students seem to have problems with this. Because they're used to like the regular classroom interaction. And they're like, all right, I'm going to say it. I'm going to sign up for this class, and it's just going to be like an hour and a half, 2 days a week. This is great. It's 4 credits. Well, what is that extra hour that you're not sitting in the classroom here? That's the online stuff. That's the forum participation. So it's expected that you read all the messages there in the forum and also that you post once a week. And you have to substantially address course topics. That means you can't post something about when's the test, dude? I'm not going to make it to class tomorrow. That test was really hard. What do I have to do to get an A? It has to be something like, I think Descartes is brilliant and here's why. Or I'm a diehard relativist, and even though you said a bunch of stuff that had me thinking otherwise, I'm back to the relativist camp because I talked to some professor at the U of O, and I'm convinced that relativism is the correct theory of truth, or what have you. But you know, something that substantially addresses what we're doing in class here, and minimum requirements got to be at least 100 words. Now, try not to write any more than like 300. It gets too long. It just takes a long time for other people to read. And this many 40 students, it's enough already. So don't go crazy and write like a manifesto on the forums. So keep it succinct, but at least 100 words minimum. And then if you want to go a little more, 200, 300, that's fine, but no more than 300. Yeah.
Will the forum response be like our main homework, or will we have a lot?
No, that's your main homework. There are questions in the book. Those are for, I used to collect those, but those are just for your own edification. They reflect the questions that will be on the exam, so a good study method would be to go through those questions and see if you can answer each one of those. But I won't collect those or anything. So the main homework is this forum posting. So reading the post and then making a post of your own. And the posts have to be done every Sunday night, 11:55 p.m. No exceptions. So late posts do not count for credit. And in case you missed that, late posts do not count for credit. And in case you need to hear that one more time, late posts do not receive credit. So all you have is just like a really minimal requirement. You get on the computer, type something somewhat coherent that addresses what we're doing in class, and click the send button, and you'll get your point for the week. And it adds up to 10% of your grade. That's a letter grade. But, you know, if you procrastinate and you have a tech issue or whatever, don't come crying to me about it. You get one exception, which is week 10, you can do a makeup post to make up for one missed post. Now, if you have some ongoing issue, you become incarcerated, put in a mental institution, or you get in a terrible car wreck and you're in traction, or, you know, there's some less serious things that, you know, people have issues where you get called away to military duty. You know, I'm not expecting to do your forum posting from Iraq or whatever. So I'm reasonable, but, you know, I forgot, I spaced it, my computer crashed or whatever aren't good excuses, because to avoid those things, you start early. And if you miss one, right, that's just one out of the 10. I'm really surprised how much of a bell curve I get with these posts, because it's such a minimal requirement. So make sure every week you're thinking, okay, I got to get my post done this week, and you know, don't put it off till Sunday night and space it. Because like clockwork, I get these posts coming in Monday morning. Don't be that person. I'm like, oh, why did you even bother? You think just because you did it, I'm going to give you credit? No, it's after the deadline. It doesn't count. Those posts are dead to me. If I see like a late post, I think, oh, this person, they're like a procrastinator. They're going to be a thorn in my side. They're going to be bugging me for test extensions. So you're probably not doing yourself any favors by posting late. Okay. And you get one do-over in week 10. Why do I sound cranky? I've had this like long 6-month break and I sound cranky.
I just have a quick question about the exams. Are they online, because it says begin
just getting to that. So right. So here's the deal on the exams. The exams are all taken in a proctored environment in the social science testing lab, which is in center 456, which is at the top of the stone stairs across from the English department, now known as Language, Literature, and Communication. I still call it the English department. And so it's just right across from there at top of the stone steps. And it has hours from like 9 in the morning till 7 at night, Monday through Thursday. Friday they close at 5. They have Saturday morning hours from 9 to 1. So anytime the test is open, you can go in there and take the exam. It'll take you less than an hour. I think 50 or 60 questions on each exam. And
And so, like, this first exam, it's going to open the end of week, the Wednesday of week three. So after class, you could head right over after class to the exam at 3:30, take the exam, and be out of there in less than an hour. Or you could wait until the following Wednesday before the labs close. You got to get there an hour before the lab closes. Bring some sort of picture ID. It doesn't have to be a student ID, just a picture ID. And sometimes it's good to have your class scheduled to show that you're in the class. Or just to help. Sometimes, particularly early in the term, they say, so what class is this for? And you tell them the wrong one. Or, I don't know, there could be snafus. So bring your schedule, like a printed copy of your schedule, if you want to be uber prepared. The tests will, you know, reflect what we do in class here and the readings. There won't be any surprises. And again, objective questions, true, false, multiple choice. And so this will be based on like the objective knowledge you'll be getting in this class. What I like to do in the class is to sort of talk somewhat about the basic knowledge and make sure you get it. And then we sort of expand it and argue points back and forth. But on the test, I'm going to ask you a question like, which philosopher has the best theory of knowledge? A, Descartes. B, Locke. You know, C, Ayn Rand. So, you know, I'm not going to ask you a question like that. But I might ask you something like, true or false, Descartes was a skeptic. Something like that. Or I might ask you, Plato's allegory of the cave was an allegory about A, B, C, D. Something like that. Something objective that's not a matter of opinion. When something does seem to be a matter of opinion, just assume I'm asking you about my opinion, if that makes it easier. Okay. Because there's some discussion about, you know, what counts as a matter of opinion is, I suppose, a matter of opinion, right? But some opinions are better than others. If you don't have a computer and there's like occasionally, like if you miss class, in here, I don't take attendance, so you can get it on the podcast. If you want to access any class materials, we have computer labs here if you don't have a computer at home. I don't think I'll, other than the recordings for class and maybe some PowerPoint slides, I won't be putting a lot of stuff up there. So, like, when I do a PowerPoint in here, I'll be clicking the slides, and then if you want, you can just download that from the Moodle site, and that'll all be archived on Moodle. If I catch you cheating in the class, you get an F in the course, not just the particular assignment. Zero tolerance policy on that. Oh, makeup exams. You know, if you know you're going to be absent or you have something going on and you're going to have to miss an exam window, just talk to me beforehand. And we can work something out, no problem. That's pretty much it. I've tried to boil down the syllabus to its bare essentials. Oh, this is the availability of the instructor, so... Yeah, I am as an instructor of the community college, I'm here to help you. If you bomb an exam, come on in and we'll try to figure out what you did wrong, how you can improve on the next exam. Also, if you just want to come to my office and chat about some perplexing question that's been vexing you, or something in the news, or something you're reading, I'd be happy to talk about those things too, even if it's not directly related to what we're doing in class here. And
what's your office?
Oh, it's Center 410J. So it's J like Jeffrey. So Center 410J, it's the fourth floor of the center building, and it's across from the bathrooms in the little hallway there. Questions? Comments? Oh, this where my office is. It's the center building, and it's Center 410J. 410J. So y'all already know my pet peeves: long-winded phone messages, emails that don't have like your full name or what class you're in, or like the philosophy class. It's like, well, I'm a philosophy instructor. I teach philosophy classes. I teach a few religion classes, but you know, philosophy class doesn't help me. So you get good subject lines. And then in class, make sure, again, if you're going to speak up, I might like yell at you a little bit, saying, what? I can't hear you. And so that means you push up the volume so everyone in the class can hear as well. So the text, it's Discovering Truth, Primer on Epistemology, which is what we'll be talking about in this class. Epistemology is the theory of knowledge. There is like one of the questions on the exam. What is epistemology? It's the theory of knowledge. So you just pick that up at the Lane Bookstore. I think they've got plenty over there.
When you talk about the forum, is it on Moodle?
Yeah, it's on Moodle.
Okay.
So, and each week you'll see a week one forum. So that's the forum. Now the topics aren't going to be, I'll have those up this afternoon after I get all the students enrolled back again. So the topics, I'm hoping I'll have those up by tonight so you can begin posting. But one of the things I do with the topics, you may have noticed in your other classes, you have like, there's like 40 threads and each of them has like 3 responses or something. So I'll set a topic and I'll give you like at least three or four questions to kind of get your philosophical juices flowing and get you thinking. And then you can answer those questions or pose another question. But you just hit the reply button to the main topic. And that way, it keeps everything in one thread and is a lot easier to read and easier to respond to. So this is theories of knowledge. And what is knowledge? Knowledge, whatever it is, knowledge has something to do with the truth. Because we talk about the knowledge of the truth. So in order to understand knowledge, we need to understand this word truth. I'll put this up here. Epistemology. Theories of knowledge, also known as epistemology. Theories of knowledge, or epistemology, it's the study of theorizing about knowledge. Knowledge has something to do with the truth. And we'll talk about that relationship in a minute. But you can't really discuss the definition of knowledge without having an understanding of what truth is. So what is truth? Any shots at a starting definition? What do you think about when you think about the word truth?
Undeniable fact.
Okay. Undeniable fact. Like what would be an example of an undeniable fact.
I don't personally know if there are any truths, but if the closest thing you could get is maybe gravity. Gravity would be.
I don't believe in gravity.
Well, there you go.
So that's an undeniable fact. They just denied it. Gravity does not exist. Okay. Well, I see what you did. It's something that if somebody does deny it, there's something wrong with them, right? They're either playing a game, or they don't really understand what you mean, or they're just trying to be ordinary, or what have you, right? So that's good. So what else? Yeah.
Something that's been tried over and over again, and they have the same result.
Okay, so something that's like, you mean like proven through testing or something?
Yeah, like the same thing.
Proven through repeated testing. Or you might say, you know, science. This proven bit, could something be true and not be proven so there might be a difference between this proving testing. This might be a way to find out whether something is true, but it might be different than what truth itself is. Yes?
Doesn't truth differentiate from person to person? Isn't it about a belief system? Mm-hmm. Like for example, like on, what do they call those lie detector tests, like a polygraph?
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know if this is factual or not, but I heard that if you truly believe that something is the truth, it will show up as true on those things. So does that have to do with the definition of truth?
Right. So it's lie detectors work by like finding subtle changes in perspiration or heartbeat,
right?
That when a person's getting nervous, and people usually get nervous when they're trying to deceive. Yeah, so you can tell us whether you're lying or not. So if you really believe something's true and it's not, it's not going to detect that because it's not a lie. It's like a mistake or a misstatement or something like that. But you said this sort of it. You made a stronger claim than that. Like, I believe that. But you said that like it depends. Truth depends on your belief system or something.
Yeah.
So
it's like something can be true to one person, whereas just like when Courtney said gravity, and you said that you don't believe in gravity. So for him, for him, gravity is a truth, but for you, it is not.
I said that could be. I don't personally. I was kind of just trying to give an example of a good example of what.
Sorry, I misunderstood.
You make. I mean, your point could stand alone too. With another example. But you like, does it mean something? Does it just mean like belief then? Is there a difference between truth and belief? Like whatever you believe is true for you. We keep on going here. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, what's your name? How do you say your first name? So I can start to get some
My name's Cody.
Cody.
Is it possible that there's different types of truth, like objective and subjective, and some are based on perspective, whereas others are based on things that we can sense with, you know, sight or touch or smell?
Okay, let me just put different minds. Maybe there are different kinds of knowledge, too. This bit about truth varying from person to person, that seems like a different idea than over here, right? Undeniable fact. Does 2 plus 2 equals 4, does that vary from person to person? It seems like that's something that's true for everyone. Patrick?
Well, couldn't everybody have their own belief in what truth is, depending on the perception?
That's kind of the point I was making.
So I suppose somebody might say, oh, this idea of like what is truth is like there's no one answer. There are all these different answers. Look, there are all these different answers. Therefore, all these answers are equally valid. What if I said truth is a sound that a little bird makes tweeting in the meadow? Is that a good definition? Or what if I said truth is a paperclip? Or truth is a feeling you get when you see those blue and red lights flashing in your rearview mirror. those seem like to be bad definitions of truth. So maybe not any. I mean, it seems like there are some definitions that just aren't going to work. And there's some that maybe be better than others. Yeah.
Well, doesn't giving truth variance kind of negate the whole thing? Like, beliefs are flexible. You can have any kind of belief you want, but in order for a truth to actually mean truth, it has to be sound. Like, cars drive on the ground. Uh-huh. I breathe in oxygen. That's truth. A belief is that, I don't know, variance of the flesh in the air.
Some people believe that to be fact. That's their interpretation.
That doesn't make it
truth. But then what do we classify as truth and not? I mean, like, almost anything could be disputed. Like, I mean, you can make the argument that just because one single person on the planet disputes something, then it might, you know, not be true.
If you dispute something, does that mean it's not true?
And that's kind of what I mean. Like, what? I guess you have to decide on what you want to make up to truth, you know, rather than just people in the science offices doing it.
You make a good point that those are going to be somebody that has some, you know, different view. Like, I don't suppose, like, a student suddenly fell to the ground and began, convulsing or something. And I would say, oh, yeah, that's, you know, John's epileptic. He has these seizures. This has to do with, like, the connection between his right and left brain. And let him do his thing, and he'll be fine in just a minute. And then maybe I bring in like a doctor, and he comes in. He's our special guest lecturer. He says, "Yes, I'm John's doctor. I'm a neurosurgeon, and John's got this thing called epilepsy. It's a disease of the brain. And here's the electronic signals that create consciousness, sort of go haywire, and cause him to." Twitch on the ground. And you know, people will probably say, okay, yeah, I believe in epilepsy. But then maybe I bring in my other special guest lecturer, and it's Matumbi, the witch doctor from Haiti. And he says, no, this is caused by evil spirits, and what I do is I put on my scary mask, and I get my rattle, and I give my magical incantation, and shake the rattle, and I drive the evil spirits away, and he'll be fine. And the doctor says, no, that doesn't work. You might get some temporary good effects because of what we know is the placebo effect, but actually, John takes medication, which has reduced his seizures, from very frequent to very rare, and here's some MRIs of his brain that shows you what's going on, how it's different than everybody else's brain. That's it. Would you say, the witch doctor's belief is true for him, and the neuroscience guy, the neurosurgeon's beliefs are true for him, and whatever you believe is true for you, and there's no difference between the two. It's all subjective. Yes?
That's one of those things I think falls under the repeated testing. Like you're saying, everybody kind of comes up with their own conclusion, that's how they kind of come up to that point. But you brought up math of 2 + 2 = 4, and that's something that I think can't be disputed. It's just, if someone does dispute that, I think they're just trying to be strong-headed about that. But that was a really good fact.
That's something that Descartes calls a self-evident truth. It's something which, just by understanding it, you realize it's true. Nobody has to prove it to you. It's not something you prove, it's something you use to prove other things. And it's something that has to be sort of taken as a given. You can kind of, with your mental vision, you can kind of see that it's true. Your mind's act of grasping it just shows you that it's true transparently. Unlike other things where you have to go through a bunch of steps to try to prove whether things are true or not. Yes?
Is truth a specific reality regardless of perception and opinion?
Reality. Reality and truth seem related in some way, right?
I'll just put reality over here. It's reality can be perceived too.
Yeah.
Well, is reality just perception though? Or is it something different than perception? I think about those perceptions, what my senses tell me. Then there's the real situation. So, for example, if I were at a party, if I were to take certain substances, my perception would be altered. But I don't think reality would be altered. It might seem I look over at my friend and his face is that it's like the head of a giant dragon and a giant pink dragon or something like that. And maybe I look over to, but John isn't really a giant pink dragon, or doesn't have the head of a pink dragon. It's just my perceptions have been altered because my brain chemistry is different. Yeah.
It seems like in one column you have some things that could be related to scientific facts or scientific theories, and in the other column it's spiritual absolute truth kind of situation. So I don't know if you can ever really answer the question, what is truth? Because there's so many ways to define it.
Well, let's try a little harder, see what we can come up with. Let's see, Cody. You know Cody? No, I got your name on. Matthew Meyer.
Yeah. It's just something that kind of is. It's you have coffee in your hand. 2 + 2 = 4. We're in classroom right now. It's just something that is.
A little bit louder, so you're saying that.
Something that is. It's 2 + 2 = 4. You can't really. Nobody disputes that. And if you dispute that, you are considered non logical or irrational or insane.
What is? Aristotle makes the controversial statement, what is. What is not, which basically means that things either exist or they don't. And so one description of the truth might be, well, that's just the way things are. And then that's the way things are doesn't seem like it's just one thing, right? Either I have a coffee cup in my hand or I don't. Now, if you think about the distinction between what is or what corresponds with reality, say, and between whether you can prove it or you can tell. Think about, so I have a coffee cup in my hand right now, that's true. But how about now? Do I have a coffee cup in my hand? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe I'm holding it like this underneath the chair. Maybe I've let go of it. I'm not holding it anymore. So you can't really tell. This is the case with the planet Pluto. They didn't discover Pluto until 30 or something like that. And they called it Planet X. And they just didn't have good enough telescopes to see it was out there. Now poor Pluto's been declassified as a dwarf planet, which isn't a true planet anymore. But I'll leave that nomenclature aside. That, you know, there's this big ball of mostly ice and rock that's out there floating, orbiting in a somewhat irregular orbit around the sun. That's always been true, and it was true before we had telescopes, and it was true even before the first human being ever looked up at the night sky and couldn't see Pluto. So that was something that was a fact about the universe, that there's this big ball of rock and ice floating out there in space, but it's something that nobody knew yet. So you might say something like, well, truth is just the way the world is, or what corresponds with reality. What corresponds with reality? And this is known as the correspondence theory of truth. The truth is that which corresponds with reality, which means, like, say, take the statement, the cat is in the mat. If you say the cat is on the mat, what makes that statement true is if the cat really is on the mat. So the cat is on the mat, that sentence, is true if and only if the cat is on the mat. So you look at the cat. I have five cats, but I still can't draw a cat with me. And then you look at the mat. And you see the cat on the mat. If the cat really is on the mat, then the statement's true. If the cat's not on the mat, the mat's over here, or the cat's over here, then it's false. And it's just, given, if you have a meaningful, precise, declarative sentence, it's either true or it's false. There's no, like, in-between. Either the cat's on the mat or it's not. Now, you might have to define, like, what on the mat means, I suppose. But, you know, you might say, well, on the mat, I mean, like, his body. If his tail is sort of sticking off a little bit, that doesn't matter. But that's just about, like, the precision of your statement, right? And if you say, okay, well, here's what I mean by on the mat, and you sort of qualify it, then you're good again. Yeah. Go ahead.
Would it be right to say that the truth is that everything is constantly changing, but there is no truth? Reality is constantly changing, it's infinite, but it's going on in every direction.
Well, what about that definition? Is that definition always changing too?
It could be.
Well, then it wouldn't be. Then it wouldn't be a good definition. It wouldn't be a true definition.
I mean, we cling to 2 + 2 = 4, but when I finished up my calculus sequence, my person who taught me their graduate project was based around the fact that they proved that 2 + 2 does not in fact equal 4.
Yeah, did you say that?
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about that, except for I'm skeptical of that claim. Let's put it that way. I don't really cling to it like I do with my guns and religion, or, you know, my fear about people that are different from me. But I do think that it's true. And it seems like that's not something that I lose with my senses. That's something that's true from a logical point of view. People make all sorts of claims, and probably if I were asked, well, how do you prove that 2 + 2 really isn't 4, they'd like show me this really abstract symbolic argument that would be impossible for me to follow. I had to sort of take their word for it that it really didn't prove that.
And also, you know, one were to collectively manipulate a group of people into believing one truth over the other, you know, an entire population believes one thing to be true over another, doesn't that change the truth? The entire world believed that 2 + 2 = 5. Well, if we all believe that, then
all Nazis believe that it's over the Jews.
Yeah, I mean, like, think about, like, at one time people thought the Earth was flat. Was the Earth flat?
No.
No, it's always been round. Patrick, you had your hand for a while.
Truth, is there, like, universal truths, like the sun will always rise and so will the moon, and then there's like natural truths, like the time will always come in and go out. But then, like with humans, it seems like it's always changing with perception. Like, some, like people that's always have a different perception of what their truth is, but with nature and the universe, it's always constant, it never changes.
So I hear like several ideas. Why people want to split the truth into like the things that we're sure about and the things that sort of seem to change, but like the eternal and the changing. This is actually what Plato tried to do. And we'll talk next time a little bit about the allegory of the cave. Plato has this idea that there's this unchanging world that he calls the forms, which is basically a Greek translation for the word concept or idea. So there's this realm of eternal ideas. That's the true realm, the realm of the unchanging, the realm of the truly real. And then there's the material world, which is constantly changing and which is less real. And he thinks that the world of concepts or ideas gives rise to or produces this world of appearances, which is the material world. So there's always that temptation, but I'm not sure that that's really true. It seems to me that the differences between these statements we've been talking about, like the chasm and the mat, it's really easy to tell if we understand the meaning of words, whether the cat's on the mat or not, under ordinary circumstances. But when you do the question about, so if we contrast, like the cat is on the mat with something like, God exists, right? You think, well, wait a minute, what? How am I going to know whether this is true, right? Because first we have a new definition of God, and then I can't, like, see God by hypothesis as a spiritual being. And existence, I'm sort of get a handle on the concept of existence. What does it mean to say God exists? I can say, well, this coffee might exist, but I can see it and hold it in my hand. So God's existence is a lot more sort of abstract, sort of hard to tell. But maybe God's existence is something like Pluto. It's just kind of hard to tell, given the extent of our knowledge. Maybe there's no difference between God and Pluto. They're purported facts about the universe that we can think about and see if there's any evidence for. It's not like God exists is something that's kind of sort of true, or true for me, but not true for you. You think about the statement God existed, either God exists or he doesn't. So you come up with a concept of what is God? Well, he's a spiritual being who's eternal and all-knowing and all-powerful and morally good and so on, and creator of the universe. And once you get a definition of God, then either such a being exists or he doesn't. There's no sort of in-between. People might have different beliefs about it, but if, in fact, there is a God, then the people who don't believe in him are just wrong. And the other way around, if there isn't a God, then the people who believe in him are wasting all their time going to church and praying and all that stuff because they're talking to somebody who isn't there. There's somebody with their hand up earlier than good to. Go ahead.
Well, so I was just going to comment on, I'm not sure if you said it back here, but just about things at, like, changing, like reality or like truth. There is no truth because everything is constantly changing. I think that that's a legitimate argument. And I like on the opposite, like if you are to believe that there is just the universal truth, I would argue that like us as human beings, there is no way to really know for sure anything is true, because the example you gave, like the earth was flat, we thought that was completely true. So even something like 2 + 2 = 4, or just anything, you take anything we know, I think it's slightly I don't use the word ignorant, but maybe overconfident that we, even the most simplest things, we know for sure. Like we just know them for sure. Like you can make the argument that we really don't know anything for 100% truth, if there is universal truth.
Now it seems like you're going at knowledge and maybe talking about knowledge and not necessarily truth. It could be that the truth is just the way the world is, but we can just never know what it is. I never believed the earth was flat, but we have some people here that go to the government school and got a little confused about that early on. But you were talking about humanity sort of had these beliefs in the past. But hasn't humanity been sort of going through progress and learning more and more about the world? And it's not like we discover these things and we radically change our minds. There's been, you know, it's a matter of like making corrections every couple hundred years and then getting a new model of the universe. It's not like everything gets turned upside on its head every couple of years. Yes?
Truth just seems like something that could cease to exist depending on when, where, and who is perceiving. Like, you could say that the cat is on the map, but once the cat is off the map, like, at a different time, that truth no longer ceases to be. Same with, like, Pluto existing. Say that there's another planet out there with life, but until we actually know them, that's when it will become the truth.
Well, you know, the truth has to be indexed to time, right? So this has to do with the vagueness of language. And so when I say the cat is on the map, what do I mean? I mean the cat is on the map right now. And so, and I could say, you know, the cat is on the map at, you know, 3:07 on Monday, January 7th, 2013, or whatever. So it's not like the truth changes, the world changes, so the truths about the world have to change with that still be true. The only way I can see truth not ceasing to exist is maybe the universe ceases to exist. And then I suppose there would be nothing to correspond with, there would be no reality for the truth to correspond to. Yeah.
It seems that truth is built on what we have gotten passed down from other generations, believing or learning about things. And so it seems like truth is semi-fluid. Like, what is true for us right now is sort of like what was true for people back in the days when they believed the Earth was flat. Perhaps things will change, but maybe right now that's the truth for us, and right now, right then, that was the truth for them.
Well, they were wrong. Is there a difference in your mind then between truth and belief? It seems like belief is having an attitude towards a statement such that you think that it represents the way the world is. And when that statement represents the way the world is, you say that the statement is true, and that your belief about the statement is true. And then if the statement or the belief is false, that means that it represents the world in some way other than it is. And so, like, the Earth is flat represents the world in a way other than it is. I'm not sure that it's all tradition either. I mean, people learn things. That's different than just sort of passing down nonsense. You know, sometimes you get mixed in, you get nonsense mixed in with that, with truth. And it's hard to sort of ferret out which is which. So that may be true. But it's not as if people just sort of come up with some kooky beliefs and just sort of pass them on to the next generation. The next generation just accepts things willy-nilly. And you have scientists that sort of test things and prove things. And then you can prove something works by, like, making a computer, a jet airplane, or something like that. It's sort of proof of the concept of the principles of physics, for example. And other thoughts? People seem to like the concept of the truth is fluid and changing. Yeah.
And I'm noticing that people seem to think it's fluid and changing. I think maybe there's more emphasis when we think about truth on being objective and subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And the knowledge, I think maybe an easier way to define it would be to first separate truth from knowledge. Because whatever our knowledge is, whatever our preconceived notions are, whether they're right or wrong, they have no bearing on truth itself.
Mm-hmm.
Truth is truth is truth. So whatever we think or feel, or whatever we gain as far as knowledge from our senses or from what's being passed down, whether it's right or wrong, doesn't change what's true.
Well put. Yeah, let's try another tack. So, has anyone here ever had a false belief?
Yeah.
I thought I had a false belief once, but I was mistaken.
In the 80s.
So think about a false belief. What are some examples of a belief that you had before that you now reject as being false? Yeah.
The tooth fairy.
The tooth fairy. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Love.
Love,
but the belief that something would continue.
Okay, the love isn't a sham or something.
there's been plenty of ways to think of it.
Make something less controversial.
So that's fun.
Well, did, what's that?
Santa Claus,
right? So what happened is you had a belief that represented the world a certain way, and then you learned more about the world as you grew up and matured. And my nephew, who suddenly discovered there was no Santa Claus at the ripe old age of 11.
That was a late bloomer.
But you know, you come to realize, oh wait, this doesn't really make sense. It's like this thing that mom and dad, when they do, they put one over on me. And right, so you have a concept of a false belief. If this way of thinking about truth is right, this is like the rest of this view. You can never have a false belief. I mean, what would count as a false belief if whatever was true was true for you, or truth was the same as belief? I mean, it wouldn't even make any sense. What does it mean to have a false? Maybe we can get a definition of truth by getting a definition of falsity. Or a falsehood.
And what if two people believe things that are completely opposite?
Then there's like a question about who has the false belief. You get this all the time, especially on the Facebook. There's some really nasty people out there, too. They're really clinging to their falsehoods. I'm just going to try to set them straight. But you have like people with different views about what is false, but it's assumed there when you have like an argument that. What do you say about people that have arguments? Each person thinks they're right. But if they have contrary positions, only one of them can be right. One person has to be right, another person has to be wrong, or maybe they're both wrong. Right? They can't be both right in the same respect. So if they're arguing the contrary positions. And so, for example, if you have two people arguing about truth,
2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah, less than 4. How about like you get two people from Minnesota arguing about what the capital of Oregon is, and one person says Albany, and another person says Portland, right? And the other guy says, "No, Albany's the capital of New York, you idiot." And he says, "I thought New York City was the capital of New York." He's like, it's never the big city; it's only the smaller one, which is why Portland is a stupid idea for the capital of Oregon. It's Albany. And the other guy says, and then maybe some native Oregonian says, "You guys are both wrong. It's Salem, right?" But that's they can't both be right, but they might both be wrong. Sometimes you have a contrary, it's something that only admits of two possibilities, like God exists, God doesn't exist. And there's really no in between there. And so somebody's got the false belief, it's just a question of, you know, who has it. But arguments assume a concept of truth or falsity, because what are you trying to do? You're trying to get the person to believe what you believe. Why? Because you think that what you believe is true, and you want to enlighten them about the way the world is. Some people, they want to win an argument just because they think somebody will do it, or they get a feeling of superiority or something. But you know, by and large, you want to persuade this person that, you know, the Federal Reserve printing greenbacks like there's no tomorrow is going to lead to hyperinflation. Or that, you know, socialism is the way to go. It's the way to have a paradise on earth, or whatever your views are. Or you want to persuade someone that eating vast quantities of red meat is not going to make them healthier or what have you. So people make arguments about the world. Now imagine if you're a relativist, and you're like, if you're a relativist, and you're wondering whether you have enough money to cover a. Would you even wonder if you had enough money to cover a check you wrote? Or you got your debit card there, and you're about to swipe it and buy some more lottery tickets. You know? And you're like, I wonder if this will make me overdrawn.
No.
I suppose no, because you can't get overdrawn with a debit card. But like, if you're, suppose like, I mean, don't you think about, oh, well, there's like some amount of money in my account. If I go beyond that, I'll be overdrawn, and the bank could have fined me $35, right? And you think rationally like that. But if you're a relativist, whatever you believe is true for me. So you say, I believe I have $1 million in my account. Swipe away. You're still going to be overdrawn. So it seems that your belief, or let's suppose you believe you can fly because you're strung out on acid. And you're like, I can fly. But you end up, you know, gravity, going back to the gravity thing, you end up splattering in the ground and you have to clean it up and it's a mess. Yeah.
A question with the money metaphor. You know, you brought up that they're pretty much just printing money that has some kind of value that is placed on it by the government. Is that real? And I mean, like, is that even more real than us believing, hey, I have a million, I can pay for school today, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole thing, it's the whole idea of fiat currency, I guess. It's real in the sense that it's a sort of promissory note that the government covers with its good faith and credit, which is getting less good every day. But I think, you know, money exists, but what does it mean? What does money mean? You know, it means just basically a bunch of blips on a computer screen. So I suppose it exists in that sense. But I would say it doesn't mean money's not real. But yeah, that's just sort of a case where you know, what counts as money has maybe changed over time, but the definition of money hasn't. And the truth about, you know, how much money you have, I suppose, is an objective thing. How much money you have in the bank is objective. You don't have a fixed definition of money as accounting on the computers at your bank. Yes?
What you were saying about, you know, the relative systems you actually... that person believe that there's $100 in their account in case they were overdrawn. It kind of brings up the experiment of, you know, the drunk girl drinking the alcohol. There is no alcohol in this model, but she still acts just as drunk because she absolutely 100% believes that there is alcohol in that bottle.
So does that prove that her belief that if there's alcohol in there is true for her, or does it prove something else?
Proves that people can be manipulated.
Well, maybe it proves that there's this effect called the power of suggestion that actually affects people's metabolism and their behavior. It has to do with the subconscious mind and so on. But that's part of the objective world. It's a facet of how the human mind and the human body interact. On Wednesday, see if you can get through chapter 1 and see if you can get a little bit into chapter 2, and we'll be talking about some more about truth and knowledge.
Is the
chapter 1 is very short. The book's at the LCC. Type the bookstore.
The syllabus is online. Right?
And the syllabus online on Moodle. You should be able to get in by the end of today.